And it was mic'd so you can hear the conversation.
Cool.
So we're playing that three weeks in a row. Aww. Just straight raw footage. It's pretty fun.
That's great.
H hours. But the show runs 2.5 hours, so you get 2.5 hours straight of it.
No, I don't think
weeks.
I know anyone in Berkeley that can watch it, well, except for Jesse.
Yeah.
But if it's archived at the site, I can.
It's not archived.
Oh, the party's not?
No, but it's not. We're not going to archive
the jam. We'll have the audio of the jam.
Oh, the audio. Oh,
yeah. But the actual BTV show you can watch online when it plays live. Yeah. Oh, okay. I guess we're rolling.
When?
Is it your R real name, Christopher Robin?
It is now. I changed it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not your birth name.
No, I changed my name to Christopher Robin. I had a different name then.
Yeah.
When I was born, I had a female name, but I changed it. Obviously. For obvious reasons.
What was the female name?
Sorry, I don't disclose that, Frank.
Top secret.
I've had many names. This is the one I have now, and it's on my driver's license, so.
H. B. E. T. Betty? Was it Betty?
No. No, it wasn't. You'll have to speak to my mom about that. Sorry.
H. A. R. R. Harriet?
No, it wasn't Harriet. Sorry.
Dorothy?
No, do I look like Dorothy?
They, in fact, yes.
Thanks, same to you.
Why? See? H. Christopher.
Well, my middle name was always been Chris, but I changed it to Christopher. And then I changed it to Christopher Robin. Because I like to be a kid in the woods forever.
Like Peter Pan?
Yeah, pretty much.
We just watched the most recent Peter Pan.
Oh, version. Really?
It was very good.
I haven't watched any of those for quite a while.
Yeah. When did we F.I. first hook up?
You and I?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know, I think I sent you some zines a couple years ago. Yeah. Because I saw you, I found you guys online. And
that
you
was
were
Jude.
Doing the zine distribution.
Yes. Yeah.
And you wrote me a letter back. And I also know the folks at Alpha Bee Press.
Oh, Dave and Anna.
Dave and Anna, yeah. I talked to them on the phone. And one time they called me, I guess they were at Varelli's house, and they called me and said, you know, send us some broadsides and then send us a tape and we'll send it to Frank or something. And I don't know whatever happened to the tape, but I did send them one, and they're nice people. So I think that might have been the extent of our communication. But, yeah. Certainly known about your antics for years.
What? How? How?
Just the underground press, probably. Maybe the internet. Haven't been on the internet that long myself. A few years.
D. A. Dave and Anna. We have a we've known them, well, probably at least 15 years.
Really?
But maybe longer than
that.
That's
a long time.
Yeah. That was like way before. It was when, it was even before TCR, I think. So I don't even remember how we knew them, how it started. I could look it up, but I don't know off the top of my head. G, A, gay, P, poet.
Gay poet.
Oh, what's his name? Bobby Starr? No, not Bobby Starr. Oh, the guy in SF? But we knew them way before we knew him. Mel Topher? Because we met Mel Topher through them. Yeah, we've known them. We've known them since Peralta. Early, so that was like 90.
Well, I met Jesse a couple of years ago, and then she started telling me, you know, about more about Frank and people we had in common. Her and I have been talking. She said, you have to meet Frank. So she told me that for a couple of years. So, but Jesse's a real good friend. Very talented.
How did you get into SM? Small Press?
How did I get into S&M?
Small Press.
I've been publishing in the Small Press for a few years.
S&M would be okay, too.
We can get to that later. I've been publishing in the Small Press for about 15 years, but I've only been doing zines since 2000. So I've been doing Zen Baby since 2000.
H-E. Hey. I. G. Got. In. To. S. M. A. Small Press. T. H. 3. THR. Through. S. Through SM, right. That is absolutely right. We met, we were performing at some outdoor benefit that the guy Dirk Dirksen that used to do the Mabuhay Gardens was throwing.
Right.
For, was it for Jello Biafra? Like a legal thing. Mm-hmm. You know, this was like
in the
80s. Mm-hmm. And so he invited Frank to perform. Mm-hmm. And at the time, what Frank was doing is...
thank you.
He was just singing along with taped music.
Uh-huh.
And he also had this workshop going, kind of a theater type workshop. So he had these people that were into theater working with him.
Mm-hmm.
So he did the Bob Dylan song, There's Something Going On, But You Don't Know What It Is, Do You, Mr. Jones? And he had this actor who was very good, dressed up straight.
Mm-hmm.
And then this woman, kind of the two of them just like acting it out.
Uh-huh.
And this was like with all this like heavy metal music and then like us doing this like 5-minute song.
Uh-huh.
And afterwards, these two people, like white, you know, white as white, dressed in black, you know, the woman had long black hair. And it turned out it was Frank Discussion and Luna, and he was the lead singer from the Feeders, who we didn't know anything about at the time, but he just loved what Frank did, and he said, would you go on tour with us? So at the time, we had our own thing going, so we said, well, you know, we can't really go on tour with you. He said, well, let me send you my records, you know? And we're like, right, you know, people never do that. Well, he sends us, like, his full collection of records. And then we ended up doing stuff with them for quite a while, but they came to one of Frank's UC Berkeley performances.
Mm-hmm.
And at that performance, it was like every other week. He would use boredom to clean out the audience to get rid of like all the kind of, you know, lightweights. And so he would just go around. He was in his motor chair. He'd go around from person to person for like an hour saying, well, what do you do? You know, just like killing time, talking to people. And when he gets to Luna, she said she's a dominatrix. And at that time, we had no idea what that meant. Frank said, what's that? And that was the beginning of our SM thing, because and then we ended up you know, getting pretty involved with those guys for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But then they split up. Years go by. We lose contact. And then Luna gets back in touch with us. And now it's like maybe 90.
Mm-hmm.
And she's remarried. Now she's with this other guy who's a small press publisher. And so she gets this idea. Well, first of all, she said she wants to publish a book that Frank had written. And then they decided that Frank should put a zine out. And we didn't even know what a zine was, you know. So that's how they published all that stuff. That's what got us started. Then they went crazy, the two of them.
Oh.
And, I mean, they were, like, really creative types, and, like, a lot happened for us working with them. But, and then they just went completely bonkers. Oh. And they, at the time, we probably had, like, 3 or 4 issues of our zine, the Trotic Revolutionary, out. And they had all the masters.
Oh, wow.
And they had deteriorated to the point where, like, I mean, they were really out there, and we really wanted our masters
back.
Yeah,
you gotta have those.
And they were living, like, down south somewhere.
Mountain View.
Mm-hmm. And so we arranged for Mikey and I to drive down early one Saturday morning. We left Frank at home. He's still in bed. And it was just like, this is gonna work, you know? We pull up to, they're in this new apartment complex, which was kind of creepy. Their car doors and trunks are all open and things are turned on. This is like, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, so obviously it had been open all night. And we get in the house and it's all stark, and Kyle's in a hospital bed and Luna's acting really wacky. We just went, hi, guys, you know, and just like, and we did it. We got the masters back and we got out of there so fast and... We were pretty proud that we had managed to do that.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah. B. A. Back to how? How did you get started in the small press?
Well, I got off the streets in the 90s, in the mid-90s, and I started, actually, I tried to submit for a while, got some acceptances, but I started doing the zine in 2000 because I have a brain injury, so I kind of didn't have anything to do, and I kind of had this little tiny shoebox I was living in Santa Cruz, and I just didn't, couldn't really think of anything to do to, like, communicate or, you know, some sort of communication with other people that might have been marginalized. And so I thought, well, I've been into zines for a while, so I just put together, like, a 3-page thing and, you know, started, you know, because with zines, once you find one, you start finding others. It's a layer.
Right.
You know, you get into a network and you meet a lot of people. So, you know, I just started doing that. And it was just basically, it was about, you know, oh, my rotten life, I'm useless to society, you know, punk rock, whatever. And I still do some of that, but obviously it's a monster now. But same idea, I think. Something to do, really.
It gets you out of hand fast. That was our experience, the whole zine thing.
It's gone out of hand, yeah. I mean, I have about... Well, my mailing is about 400 people, which I do all by myself, you know, pretty much, and hand staple, you know, with SSI or whatever. And I get, you know, I have 50 contributors per issue. That's a lot. I mean, the small press is small, and the zine circulation is small, but for one person, it's a lot of work. It takes me a month to get out all my issues, you know. So it's pretty much pretty morbidly obese.
Yeah. I and they get F A fatter That was our experience, because it was like, for the amount of money that it costs us to make it, we can't go over this number of pages.
Exactly.
Oh, but we want to put this. And like, can we add like four more pages? And it just kept getting bigger each issue.
That's what I'm worried about. Every issue, mine seems to add one more page. Exactly. And now I'm doing 11 by 17. Uh-huh. If you saw the first issue, it's 8.5 by 11, 3 pages. Uh-huh. That's it. No contributors. I didn't, you know, nobody cared. Nobody cares that much anyway,
too.
But it's gotten bigger, so.
Yeah.
And I gotta find out some way to cut it back. I'll show you one I'm really inspired by right now, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I'm pimping for a friend here. My friend does these, and they're instant pussy. They come out every single month, and it's great because it's poetry and porn.
Who does this?
My friend, Misty Rainwater Light. She lives in Albuquerque. And she's got instant pussy on the web now, but it's print, and, you know, it's really small, and it's got a lot of good poets, and it's, you know, it's pretty outrageous.
But
I can't really go back to that because, you know, partly I send a lot to prisons, so I can't have covers like that online because I'd have to black it all out.
Right.
But, you know, I think the instant thing is really commendable. You know, and the poetry's good. I mean, poetry and porn, you can't go wrong.
Right.
I mean, I think, you know, each one needs the other. Or, you know, no one's going to be interested, right? So. And,
We get a lot, a lot, F, R, from P, R, I, prison.
Oh, prisons, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I have a lot of prison input.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good artwork coming out, you know, you run the gamut, you know.
Well, who
was
that one
hands.
Artist that we end up having up on our website? The guy, the painter?
Claudio?
No, that was in prison.
Oh, yeah.
Frankie, remember his name. Rich.
John Rich.
Oh,
I don't know him.
I think he took up painting when he was in prison.
Really?
He has something to do, and I mean, his stuff is incredible.
Oh, I'd like to see that sometime.
And he's up on our website under the featured artist.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Yeah. But he's out of prison now. He was in there for drugs and got out and I think had some big art shows because he did poetry and that.
Yeah. I like to encourage them, you know. I mean, it's like, well, you know, I'm over here doing this on a low budget with, you know, and I have a lot of time and you have a lot of time and you don't, you know. It's like, you know, be creative and try to stay out of the hole and make a zine. I do some distribution, too. I'm distributing 3 zines now. Mm-hmm. I don't have any now, but they basically smuggle out the hard copies to me in some kind of way, and then I produce them and try to get them out to whenever, however they want me to send them out. So
that's great.
But, you know, I enjoy the correspondence. Mm-hmm. It's always interesting, and, you know, we keep each other going.
It is amazing. How much see creative stuff there is out there?
Yeah. There's a lot. I don't think people realize how much is really going on in the underground, especially print. There's a lot of print going on, and I don't think people realize that, you know, it's not all on the internet.
Right.
There's a lot of good creative stuff, a lot of good writing, a lot of good art.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
We were T O torn. When we started Lover, we couldn't do both. We couldn't keep doing, because
I mean, just like you were saying,
putting out the
either.
Zine was like an amazing, it was like really what we did. And it was so much fun and so rewarding to get that, you know, that issue in your hands and sending it out to people.
Yeah.
But we realized we couldn't do both, and at a certain point we just decided that had to be the end of TCR.
Well, you got to put all your energy into one thing, otherwise you get something half-assed. And your guys' website, I mean, it's pretty complex. I've had a little trouble myself getting around in there. It's huge. It's not, you know, it's not like the usual poetry websites or art websites that are out there. So I couldn't do what you do, obviously. Because it's just too much. But I, you know, I have enough trouble doing that. That dang 300 copies, whatever it is. But I could definitely understand that. Though I do appreciate the zines that are able to stay in print. Because a lot of, not like what you do, because yours is pretty vast, you know, you do a lot of multimedia. But then a lot of print zines will say, oh, we're just going to go on the web. And then they put up one page and, you know, there's not really anything going on. And then, you know, it's like, there's a few lately that have told me, oh, we're just going to be online now because it's expensive. Well, I know, but I'm not going to drag my computer into my bed and, you know, or take a train and be able to read the zine and enjoy it. I'm probably actually not going to be reading it as much if it's just a web zine, you know.
Well, that's what we had. Even before Lover, we thought, because that's when the internet stuff was going, and we decided it was just too much fun to have that zine in your hand.
Yeah.
We just couldn't do it as an online thing.
Right. Yeah. There's definitely a lot going on in both medias.
Yeah. Zines. R. P. H. Physical.
That's what I appreciate about them, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I've even done some publishing on websites that aren't there anymore. It's like when you have something in your hand, you know, it's your friends or it's something you wrote, and you have it always.
Right.
But on the internet, you don't know when that site's going to fold, and then whatever you did, it doesn't exist, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of really do enjoy having the hard copies.
And?
Substantial.
P. People. P. A. S. Pass the zines around. So that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, zines are accessible to, you know, homeless people can read a zine, or a prisoner, or someone in the hospital who won't have internet. So, you know, it makes it really accessible to everyday people, you know. That's important to me.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm not really that technically apt anyways.
M. I. Mikey. Mikey keeps us propped up because none of us
are. Oh, really?
Even.
None of you are?
It's like if anything goes wrong, Mikey, just tell us which buttons to push.
So you're running the show here.
Yeah, he pretty much is. Technically speaking, he's the guy. Yeah, he runs from computer to computer all day.
Well, it's quite an empire. I'm very impressed.
Yeah.
A lot going on.
When? What? Are you doing in Canada?
Canada, nothing. I'm just going there for the hell of it. I've had sort of a karmic windfall financially, so whatever, you know, the money that I'm receiving from the certain ex-girlfriend is going to travel. So, because I loaned her some money in the past. So basically I'm just going there because my friend eventually wants to move there, lives in Portland, because she just, you know, everybody wants to go to Canada, you know. I don't think I want to live there, but I do want to see it because I never have before, and that's the only reason.
So you're going to Vancouver?
Yeah, we're going to take a ferry over from Seattle, I believe. Yeah. I don't know anything about Canada, I have to say, so that's part of the reason.
We went to, we've been to Vancouver a couple times.
Really?
And to Toronto a number of times.
What'd you think of it?
First time we went to Vancouver, it was Frank and I as tourists.
Uh-huh.
And that was just fun.
Uh-huh.
It was just fun. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
We had a car accident.
Oh.
Totaled our car, knocked me out for, I don't know, close to a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got a bunch of money. And
nice.
So it was kind of like, what would you like to do? I said, oh, God, I've always wanted to go to Canada. And we took a train or something. That was like my kind of fantasy, taking a train. And Frank goes, well, let's go. And I'm going, really? You know, it never occurred to me that we could actually do it.
Right,
know?
Yeah.
So that was really fun. Mm-hmm. And then we got booked to perform there. Mm-hmm. And that was a less pleasant experience.
Really?
But I think that had to do with the group of people that brought us there. Mm-hmm. It's like rich art
really?
Students.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's pretty boring.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And we were like staying in the space. Mm-hmm. So we were like totally dependent on them. And
great.
they had some seriously bad attitudes.
Really?
And we took bath. They set up a tub for us in the middle of like their living space. And there were, I don't know, there's probably five or six of us that traveled together. And we'd all get in the tub together, as many as would fit. They really weren't liking our scene at
all. They
didn't
like the outlaws bathing in that
other
space.
Yeah. They, P, L, played chess the whole time we were
chess.
Taking a bath, as if we weren't there. As if we weren't taking
That's
a bath.
Bizarre.
All these like nude people splashing around in the water, you know.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
So that colored it. But the first time we went, we liked it quite a bit. It was it's a beautiful place. So I think if you know anybody, I don't know
anybody, but I know the person I'm going with.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, there's quite a bit of zines going on in Canada right now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm connected to the Underground Literary Alliance, and we have some people in Canada there. So, but I don't think I'll be making any visits because I'm not too good with the terrain. So geographically, I leave that to my friend and she'll tell me where to go.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Yeah.
I always have a good time.
Yeah. There was a theater there that played Frank's videos for years.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So they had a scene there that, you know, really liked what we were doing. It turned out it was the same space that we had performed in, but it was now a theater, and we didn't realize that for like years. And then I said, I recognize that address.
That's funny.
Yeah. So there was a, you know, a group of people there that liked what we were doing.
Nice.
N. U. Nude. I. Nudists. In Vancouver?
Are there nudists in
Vancouver? Oh, right. There was a nudist group. They came to the performance in Vancouver. Right. Right. I forgot about them. Wow, Frank. Is that how we hooked up with the ones that we did in Santa Cruz? Through that?
Oh.
We did. Is that what you were going to say? We did two nights. Of the Vancouver performance. Mm-hmm. Two nights. Right. One night. R-O-R-I. It was all rich artists.
Mm.
Right. That was terrible.
Wow.
And then the next night was the nudists.
Wow.
And that was great.
Great.
They were just totally game and enjoying
what
we were doing. Right. Would you read some of your poems?
Sure. Any kind of subject or anything, or just whatever? Don't care?
Whatever, yeah.
Whatever.
Pick what you feel like reading.
I brought a few because I just finished a manuscript, so I got a few that I'm looking over here. I will read the one that I just did for my new book that I'm trying to put out called Freaky Mumbler's Manifesto. And I'm not going to preface it too much, but basically it's about people that think that people on SSI just stay home and do art all day, and that they're somehow gifted. And sometimes, you know, a lot of the time I realize that basically I'm just sitting at home being dumb. So that's what this is about. It's called Freaky Mumbler's Manifesto. I'd like to tell you I stayed up all night shadowboxing with the muse, creating rock and roll poems that will topple empires, or that Oprah called to say I wasn't really just a fat, hairy loser and asking, how did I ever transform the misfortune of my birth and my own profound stupidity to become the artist I am today? And that she wanted to give me a car on national TV to show the world that half-wit trannies are a gift, not a detriment to society. But instead, I will tell you this. Staying up all night touching oneself does not a genius make. And tranny just ain't that sexy, no matter what the enlightened say. And sometimes being dumb is just being dumb. And being broke is no reason to gloat. And being smelly is not revolutionary. And being confused is just being confused. Not having a day job never made me a better artist. It's just one more day of bad coffee, bad skin, unshaven, no sex. One more day of trying not to wish I was smart or good-looking or employed. Because, you know, it's not very poetic to wish for such things. But far more entertaining to bleed the blues all over the dirty carpet, creating a new alphabet of some sort of deranged redemption, and strike a 1-2 punch for all the wage slaves who can't afford to be literary. So I'm sorry, Oprah, I don't have any visions. There's just nothing supernatural about being out of half and half and not having showered by 3 o'clock. And I'm out of toilet paper, I don't know what to do. Should I write a poem? Should I eat? Should I kill myself? Or should I just figure out how to wipe my own ass first? There's just no key for this sort of thing. No cosmic blueprint. Nothing extraordinary about this day, this life, this poem. Freaktown is not a tourist destination. It's the end of the line. Nobody's giving out any prizes. It's not hip. And no one's cleaned the bathroom in 6 years. That's one side of the story.
Wow.
There are other sides to that coin, but that just happens to be one of them.
R. Reed. R.E. Reminds me not. Remind me not to. S. Shit at your house.
Well, I recently did buy some. That's just the day of life. Don't worry, Frank. If you come over, I'll have you all taken care of. Don't worry. You'll be a special guest of honor. Get the 2-ply or whatever.
2-ply. G. H. E. L. Helms. A. T. T. A. Attacked. The wrong agency. Frank always says that when Helms attacked the NEA,
Frank said
he's attacking the wrong government agency. Mm-hmm. It should be SSI if he wants to get the artist.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because that's what's funding the artist.
That's true. Yeah. It really is. I mean, the government is funding a lot of the art, and they don't realize
that's
it, you
right.
know?
That's right. M, most of the artists we know are on SSI.
Yeah.
Including Frank.
Well, I wasn't thinking I'd go on SSI and be an artist. I just got on SSI and I didn't have anything to do. So that's kind of how I started doing all that stuff that I kind of do now. But there's a lot of work, like some of my working friends that are poets, oh, I wish I could stay home all day and do art. It's like, I don't always stay home all day and do art. You know, there's some days I just sit and I don't, able to do anything, you know. I'll do like one thing, you know, and other times it'll be hyperspaz. But, you know, for me, if I didn't have to, you know, be honest, I'd probably, you know, I'd be able to do something else, which I'm not. So it's not always a matter of sitting home all day, though I certainly enjoy the playtime that I have, and I am going to Canada. So it's a mixed bag.
I. F. I. Find. We. Are. Getting. M. O. More. B. U. S. Busy in our lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, mm-hmm. yeah, I know. I mean, I don't know if that's just kind of a trend for everybody, but that's certainly
Yeah, I think everybody is. Yeah. Even the one, those of us that supposedly do nothing. I mean, I'm constantly busy. When I can accomplish things, I try to go all out and accomplish things.
Yeah.
You know. Because I like to always try to be engaged, you know, with the day.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
What is your SD, your day like?
I get up about 1 o'clock. And
there's another
and
one.
And I slowly try to come to, and I try to
five.
Figure out what
Frank
I'm
gets up
next.
At five.
You get up at five in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes I go to sleep at 3 a.m. You know.
Right.
So.
Yeah, we go to we go to bed. The latest has been like
things.
11 a.m. But we try to go to bed more like 9, 10, anywhere between 8 and 10.
In the morning. You go to bed.
Yeah.
You guys are worse than I am. Total. Yeah. Creative insomniacs, definitely. Yeah. I work best at night too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seemed like we just drifted there. We didn't do it on purpose, but that was our natural inclination. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, we stopped fighting it.
Right.
We just accepted that was the way it was.
I figured the body's going to tell me when I need to sleep.
Right.
And then I try to honor that, you know, as much as I can. I need to sleep more in the day. It's, you know, it feels healthier for me, then I'll do that, you know. Yeah. But a lot of the daytime hours are just figuring out how to do, you know, simple errands and, you know, keep bills together and that sort of thing.
So you get up around 1.
I get up around 1 o'clock, and then I'll figure out, you know, am I going to mail things? You know, I've got letters to answer. My snail mail pile is usually about this high.
Right.
And I've got to decide if I'm going to answer mail, you know, or I'm going to collate, or I'm going to start the new zine, or I'm going to work on poetry, or I'm going to pay bills, or I'm going to try to eat. What should I eat, you know? Should I take a shower, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, this is like, we'll go on for quite a few hours, and I'll get a few things done, and I'll go downtown, and I'll do my routine, I'll go to the post office, and I'll go to the library, and get the free books, and then all my friends are playing music on the street, or whatever, and then, you know, I'll ride my bike, I'll trip around, I'll pick fruit off the trees, you know, whatever I'm doing around town, tripping around, you know. Skateboard or whatever, but I'll make copies, and then I'll have friends in and out, you know, because I run the Zen Baby Hotel, where there's a lot of lost poets coming in and out all day.
Tell us about that.
It's not really a hotel. I'm just making that up. It's just my apartment. I notice that a lot of poets who can't find their way home seem to gravitate there, and I'm not really supposed to have any guests because I live in low-income housing, you know, but I do have friends that come in and out. And then, you know, we drink coffee and we talk about our projects. And on Friday, I run the Firefly open mic at the laundromat downtown with my friend Brian. So we do our open mic every Friday. And we got a lot of cool people coming in there, a lot of good friends, and a lot of creative stuff going on there. And
Do you have FE featured artists ever?
Yeah, we do. Every month we have featured artists. We're trying to when we get it together.
You plugging yourself? Frank's available to be a featured
artist. Jesse Beagle's going to be coming down, so we could have Frank. You know, we could have everybody come. That would be great. So she's going to come down, but I think it's going to be in the spring. So, you know, and I was kind of concerned about her coming, you know, needing a caravan, so we could always work out something with everybody, you know, and do a performance. That'd be great. And because I don't know if you guys know Mark States.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to come in the spring, so we're going to try to get Berkeley down that way pretty soon.
Yeah.
And I'm lost.
So, let's see. You were saying that's one of the things you do is your
poetry.
Yeah,
okay.
So, and then, yeah. So that's like, what do you do after you've done all that stuff?
Then I go home. I go, well, then I go make more copies, and then I go home, and I just, you know, sometimes I'll do the computer, just the basic answer mail, doing the zine collating, nothing too exciting. Whatever artistic thing I can get into, I'll do.
This is the evening now?
My liveliness up here. I'm doing movies, too. I just made a couple of DVDs, and one's called Sacred Nonsense. It's about a road trip I took. I gave my friend Joe Pachinko's book. I don't know if you got a chance to read it, called Urinals of Hell.
Right.
Him and I took a road trip to New Mexico in May, and we got to interview our friend Todd Moore, who lives there. And
we get stuff from him.
Good. And
recognize all these names.
Great. Well, I'm gonna have to send you the videos now. Then.
Yeah, very much.
But we did an interview with him
on Lover and BTV.
Okay. Good. Yeah. I'll definitely send you that one. Is the one I made is just
all
what
of your all of your videos we send to us whatever videos
okay,
you have
I will.
That you've
made. I will. I have one. That I just did. It's just an interview with Todd with readings interspersed. We all did a reading.
Wow.
Misty from Instant Pussy, me, Todd, and Joe did a reading at the Blue Dragon, Albuquerque. Mm. So I taped that. So one of just Todd with him doing an interview at his house and him reading by himself, basically. And then I have Sacred Nonsense, which is just a blowout, adrenaline driving and some poetry, but not very much because we want people to watch it. But and just talking about art and, you know, outsider art, whatever you call it, and just friends getting together, being stupid, and so I'll send you that.
Yeah.
And you might get a kick out of it. A few people have, not very many, but you know, it's kind of specialized, you know. Mm. But it's the brand of lunacy you might appreciate. So that's one of the things I'm trying to do. Which I have a technical expert myself because I. You know, my stuff breaks down and I can't do anything about it. So my friend Leon helps me with DVDs, with, you know, getting the VCRs to work because I do all my editing on a VCR. I'm kind of old school.
That's what and, we do too.
Yeah. And getting the camera up and running and because I don't get into all the storyboards and shit like that. It's just basically I want to get some poets on the road, movies, and just different stuff, poets doing crazy stuff and trying not to bore people. So that's what the video stuff is all about right now. Wow. And I do have a technical man that helps me with it, which I'm very grateful for. Because I don't know why I start projects that I really don't know anything about, but what are you going to do?
Why should that stop you?
Why should I stop any of us, right? You know? Otherwise, we just be lumps.
Learn as we go.
Right. Learn as we go.
N-E. Never. Has. Stopped us. No. Never
good.
Has.
Good policy. Yeah. I agree with that. I got to press on. There was someone else that told me to say hi to you, because I sent an email to a few people to say, you know, tune in tonight or whatever, and he's from Sunny Outside Press, David McNamara. Do you know him? Massachusetts?
No, that doesn't ring
okay.
a bell.
He said to tell you hi, and Shane Allison said to tell you hi, too. I don't know if you know him.
Wow.
Black fag poet.
If he sent us stuff, we'd probably know him, but not
yeah,
by his
I might
name.
Send you some stuff of his. I think you'd like it. He's a pretty wild guy.
Yeah.
He's very out there, very talented.
L. We. No, P. E. People. Think. They. Are not see are creative
people think
they are not creative that we run into that there are
oh
that they think is like like, you know, oh, well, you're like a creative type. I'm not.
Oh,
like,
yeah. That,
as if, like, as if there are creative types and not creative types.
Yeah, no,
as if everybody,
everybody
isn't creative.
Right, I agree. Everybody's creative.
Right.
It's just whether you decide to harness it or, you know, or investigate it, I guess.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't think that there's that division. Anyone can do anything at any time. I mean, zines prove that. You know, you don't gotta be smart or talented to do a zine. You know, you just gotta have ideas, and you don't want to be engaged with other people, I guess.
How did you B-E-B-R-E break through that?
Being talentless?
Yes.
I haven't broken through it. I don't know how to answer that. I mean, I'm a creative person because I just don't like doing any of the other things that seem more mainstream, and they all kind of bore me. You know, I don't want to go to the movies, so, you know, I just rather play, and I don't know. I don't know what there is to break through. I like writing. I've always liked to write, so I feel like it's always an experiment, you know, to see where you could go. And I don't know exactly. But poetry, for me, just breaks things down, so I understand them more, you know. It puts things in perspective for me. I don't know if that answers your question, Frank.
Yeah, does it? No. Yes and no, maybe.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't really know what the question was, so yes and no.
Okay,
is
I think it was a yes. It does answer his question.
Okay.
Yeah. R. E. Read another poem.
Okay. This one kind of it's probably more also about disabilities and being special and not being special, which is my case. But it's called Who We Kill. The mentally ill who wave water pistols, the blacks who wave wallets and can't surrender fast enough, the animals that weren't cute enough, the animals that made the mistake of being born delicious, the trannies that can't hide the mistake of being born wrong, the self-taught publishers who overflow the toilets in the boarder's bathroom, the lone poet who furiously walks the streets thinking, maybe around the next corner the world will show me some light, the service workers who spend their pay in the local bars and their imaginations on satellite dishes, the prisoners who make our goods for no pay, the muddy trumpet players with their songs of drowning on America's rooftops, the musty bookstores of my childhood with shelves that went on forever and kept me from the taunting of schoolmates, the roadside fruit stands we passed on our way to Christmas in Soledad, the high rents here will send my friends away, the potters who can't sell their pots, musicians whose notes are out of time, poets who can't sell their revolutionary poem for a crust of bread from a bird's beak. We're not the chosen ones, and nobody's buying anyway, so get on SSI or find a better hustle. A barn, a roach-infested shoebox at the El Palomar, or maybe a room at El Centro, where they didn't find the body and the fluids dripped through the floor into the restaurant below. And there's always that old standby, the bridge behind Denny's where I used to drink coffee, crawl into my bag and scribble poetry onto the concrete wall, not waiting for a publisher, just the light of day. Actually, I prefaced that poem, but I prefaced the wrong poem, so that wasn't actually what I said it was about, but it doesn't matter. Nobody cares.
Would you read one of my poems?
Sure.
M. U. T. Mutant. No, mutation is evolution.
Oh,
is that
I'll
in chat
that one. Yeah, I'll read that one. That sounds good.
Page 21.
Great. 21. Mutation is evolution. You foolish idiot. You want to make everything, everyone normal. You want to cure, prevent all crips, freaks, crazies, oddballs, slow ones, misfits, bums, artists, poets, and all other impractical, different-looking, strange mutations. You fool! How to condemn the human species to extinction. Look, the game of evolution is changed by experimentation. We freaks are the experimenters. The name of the game is flexibly adapting, coping, leaping, risking into the unknown, newness of uncontrolled future. We crips, we misfits have always been the adapters, the leapers. Hell, I'm not wasting my time talking to you about magic and such, just about evolution. Well, if you don't need us crips, us misfits, if you don't need us no more, our advice is don't breathe deep in your airtight coffin of normalcy, and move very slowly, very carefully in your thin-skinned world of ever-increasing fragility. Oh yeah, good luck. That's dynamite, dude. I like that one. That's very cool. Maybe we can trade for one of your chats.
That's what I was thinking. You should just keep this.
Cool, thank you. I'll take it. Yeah. Very good stuff, man.
Do you want him to read another one? He wants you to read another one? No, is that what you read? No, go ahead. Read one of yours again.
Okay. I'll read Slow Time Race to Nowhere as soon as I can find it. Here it is.
B E T T Betty?
Betty.
He's another guest. Betty?
Betty. No, not Betty. Keep trying, though. You'll get it one of these days. Okay. Slow Time Race to Nowhere. Told I'm slow, I move at half the world's speed, two sizes too big, black Converse, stay two cups of coffee ahead of the insults. One good arm for waving at trains, my best eye avoiding stepping on used needles, and laying my pennies down on the track. Leg muscles taut, head down in hood, for the revolution we'll all be walking. And eyes on the ground, now I practice, collecting discarded fruit from the trees which I happily eat. As if I'm the lone survivor of some suburban apocalypse. You'll see them on TV outdoing us all. The blind climb Mount Everest. Amputees play the piano. The locked in invent their own alphabet. Don't know what excuse I have for a guy stuck in the fourth grade. You gotta be a genius or something. But I figure they'll kill you either way. With a glassy stare or run you over when you're peering into the gutters of your neighborhood. Clothing in shreds, frantic for a spark. Anything that can still catch fire. All I'm doing is telling secrets, telling on myself and telling on you. I hate Oprah anyway.
We have a T H E a theme. Here.
Theme?
Oprah. Oprah's come up a few times.
She has?
No, that's not the theme. What's the theme? Sorry. We have a theme
that's
here.
That's true. I do have two poems to Oprah, Frank.
C-R-I. Crips.
Crips. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what to say. Just, it's the part of that, there's like two sides, I think, of having a disability for me. One is that people think you're over here and you're super special and you get to be extraordinary and climb mountains and then you get on TV and all this and you've surpassed everything that's supposedly wrong with you. And the other part of it is that, you know, you're just a useless lump and, you know, you're no good and you're wasting your time and you're taxpayers' money. So, and I don't, you know, I fall... You know, I'm just like, Well, you know, my poems are just, I'm not that special. And Oprah doesn't care. That's just what my poems are about. So, you know, I mean, you do extraordinary things. You know what I mean? But I don't. So that's my take on it. That's all. So. So I just don't spend all day doing extraordinary things. That's just all. I know you have an opinion on that, Frank.
Some. Some people think poems are H A R hard to write.
Do you think they're hard to write?
I am a P O E T. I am a poet, and I am L A lazy.
Lazy. I'm a lazy poet too.
But they don't know that.
Okay, right. Yeah, because you produce so much work. Right. I wouldn't think of you as being lazy either, seeing the volume. You know. Right.
Right. So you're like the way when you write a poem, you just sit down and write it.
Do you
don't rework it or anything.
Do you write effortlessly? Do you do a lot of revision in your poem?
No revision. Zero.
Yeah, I don't do a lot. I will, but...
Never.
You never do?
No.
Well, that's pretty extraordinary. Sometimes I'll spend all day on a poem. And then other times I'll just write it and that'll be it, you know?
Yeah.
I think sometimes poems will require work and some won't. It varies.
N-O. Now. I. M. J. U. Just. C. H. O. P. Chopping. Up. Old. L. O. Long. Well, he wrote this one poem. This was like in the early 70s, maybe. It was like really long. Mm-hmm. And so then we rediscovered it like a year ago. Mm-hmm. So he went through this poem and chopped it up and gave each section a name.
Nice.
And so that's what he's been doing recently. He'll send out like one of those snippets. And 3, 2, 32. He turned it into 32 poems.
Oh, wow. That was a long poem.
Yeah, it was huge. But the... E, A, easiest 32 poems you ever wrote.
Yeah.
You did come up with titles, though, for each of the 32. Huh. Yeah.
Pretty good.
We've been milking them for at least a year now.
32 poems is a lot of poems.
Yeah. Yeah.
I barely write that in 6 months, so it's pretty good.
How you wrote it? It was the book. It was kind of big in the 60s, Be Here Now.
Oh, yeah,
Ramdas.
I know that book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that book.
Yeah. And in the back, there were these cards, which... So one day, Frank just sat down, and you had somebody just, like, throw the cards at random or something. P... H, photographs, they're photographs of, no, photographs, yeah. And so he just went through the photographs and looked at the photograph and just like stream of consciousness wrote. And that was how this poem was created. Wow. On acid.
Of course.
A. G. A. Again. E. A. Easiest poem you ever wrote.
Yeah, some poems are like that, I think. Yeah. Nice when it happens.
Where did you, G, grow up?
I grew up in San Jose.
How was that?
It was okay, you know, suburbia. It was all right, mild. My dad was immigrated from Italy. So, and my mom, he was a teacher. My mom was a teacher off and on. And she also had a small bookstore, an independent bookstore in the 80s where I worked. So we were one of the first independent coffee house bookstores because back then they didn't have a lot of them. So it's kind of her idea. There was maybe one in Capitola, and she kind of got the idea, and it went bankrupt eventually, but I learned a lot about books there. I learned a lot about poetry and Bukowski, and you know, and it was good work experience for me until I got fired.
Got fired from your mom's bookstore?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Family.
Why did you get fired?
I was very rebellious. I shaved my head, and, you know, it was a suburb, and, you know, back then people really, they didn't want to deal with, you know, I was kind of punk rock. You know how it is when you're at that age, 17, whatever.
F.
Very rebellious.
U. N. Funny. N. S. A. N. San. Bernardino. S. A. N. San. Jose looked really good because Frank was in San Bernardino. San Jose looked like
right.
a pretty cool
well,
place to be.
Comparatively speaking,
right.
I'm sure, yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't doubt it. But he's got his good point.
Where? I. Wanted to be, Frank wanted to be a poet, or where you wanted to be. This is where he would dream about being up here in the Bay Area when he lives in San Bernardino, high school and early college age. S. H. S. H. U. S. H. U. No. S. S-U, M, summer, summer C, A, summer camp, all the counselors were from San Jose. S. T. State, San Jose State.
Oh, okay.
And you liked the counselors. Yeah, Frank hung out with the counselors and listened to Bob Dylan and stuff like that. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. Any, some, S, A, I, some said they would R O O room with With me? Oh, if you moved up there, they would room with you? But R E H A rehab would not transfer you or not pay for you to move.
I see.
So you were stuck where you were.
So Frank, how long have you been in evolutionary? How long have you had CP?
CP since birth.
Since birth?
I always was an evolutionary.
I'm sure.
And his mom really was, that, you know, right from his birth, they wanted to put Frank in an institution. And his mom stood up to the doctors with really no support, saying that she looked in Frank's eyes and she didn't believe that he, because they said, he has no awareness. Completely, and she said, I don't think so. When I look in his eyes, that's not what I see.
Right.
No intelligence. They said he has no intelligence. Yeah. She had to fight all through his childhood to not go that route.
We're lucky. We could have lost you forever.
We could have lost you forever.
And
right.
You never would have been able to come out and do everything that you do.
M-A-N. Many. Many times. No, many are lost.
Yeah, right. I know. It's very sad. A lot of people get locked away and, you know, people forget about them. It's very sad.
One time a woman read Out of Isolation. Have you ever read Frank's poem Out of Isolation? It's a guy who's institutionalized from birth, which is kind of like Frank was inspired to write this knowing that this could have been his life. And he's put in the institution and people relate to him as if he doesn't know what's going on, but he completely knows what's going on, but there's no interaction. And then this young physical therapist, all gung-ho, is determined to get something going with this, like, lost cause, and a relationship develops between the two of them.
Interesting.
And so she's really as much in isolation as Frank's character. And they get a relationship going, which ends up being physical and sexual, too. And then she freaks out. It's like, what am I doing, you know? And she withdraws, and in the end... Frank's, well, we did it as a video and a play, that's what I'm saying, Frank's character. The person, the institutionalized person has nothing to lose, so they just start wailing and, you know, and finally she just breaks down, and that's kind of the end of the poem of them kind of coming together and like all, you know, like everything just opens up. And this woman that we were corresponding with through like a small press thing, when she read that poem, she actually had a sister that was institutionalized. Like, that story was her sister's story. So she tracked her down. And it turns out the sister had, like, developed, was married. You know, like, had a life. And so she reconnected. She didn't tell her parents because she thought that would be, like, too devastating for them to know that. So Frank's, you know, always said, like, if that's the only consequence that ever came from anything I did, that would, like, be more than enough.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
What are you thinking? R. Read another poem.
Okay. Well, I'll mix it up and I'll stop. I stopped talking about Oprah for a minute, Frank. What do I have?
She should pay. She should pay you. Pay us. product placement, like, for mentioning her name?
I'll read Clownfish. I can't work. I've dedicated this day of snapping my fingers and singing a chorus with the last heartbeat of the world. I'm a carny animal, ugly Jack, skipping over minefields of loose synapses, a broken-headed professional bumbler by trade, gender mutant of the sensual circus, lilting ghost radio in my nerves of a zigzagging, carefree, ponytailed girl who I loved with such impossible belief I asked her to please grow up and leave me in the loop of the eternal summer 8-track, with an endless boyhood sky and no mother's calling me home. The dummy of the furious walk, searching for an ill-defined mysticism promised to me when the world fell out of my skull. I dream the numbers, I own the make-believe, but I can't find a nickel to scratch the sunshine out of this winning day.
P-E people. A. Ask. How do you? L. How do you see? O. M. Come up with the M I X, the mix of I M images.
I don't know. How do you come up with yours?
L. A. Lazy.
Lazy. Well, I'm lazy too. Whatever comes, comes. It may take a year or a day, but
they
things will come.
They don't know that.
Right. Well, poetry isn't really that hard to write. No. I don't think.
They.
Anyone could do it.
They don't know that either.
No, they don't. It's not that specialized. No, it's just tapping in, I think. I don't know. Jack Hirschman said it. I misquote him, but he said, everybody's a poet. Everybody's invited. I think that might have even been on your website. I can't remember. But I did see it recently somewhere. Yeah. Something Jack said about that. He said, we're all poets. So I tend to agree with that.
All. Yeah. A. R. And we're all artists.
Yeah.
All A-R-T. Art. All art is like that.
Right. That's true. We've all got it.
T. A. T. Tattoo. Tell us about your tattoo. Thank you, Frank. Tell us about all your tattoos.
Drunken mistakes. All of them. Misspent youth. You might like this one, though. That's the Fool.
Oh, the Fool from the Tarot
card.
Card. Yeah.
I got that when I got out of the mental hospital in 1993.
Oh, let's show it to the camera so he can know.
It's not very good.
Is that
it's
what you
really
mean?
Old. But it's I got that in San Jose. And that's my
Did
card.
You get it? Yeah.
So that's the one I actually deliberately got.
S H. Oh, show him the photograph. Is that in here or in the other room?
No.
No, that's not what you mean. Yeah, the photograph. Yeah. Oh my yeah, you're getting it out of there. Oh, look at that. So that's this guy in New York. One time when we were there, he was doing the Tarot series.
Oh, wow.
What he would do is he would take photographs.
Whoa, that's
and then
incredible.
He painted it on the negative.
Wow. Well, it's the dog and everything.
He does all sorts of things.
That's great, man.
So he wanted Frank as the fool.
I love that.
He took that picture in his studio and then created all that stuff around it.
That's right. Fool Brothers. I love it. That's great.
Yeah. That is all of that binder. Yeah, no, that's, let's see, which one is that? Is that the writings? Frank Moore's writings. But
got
this is
there, Frank?
We keep expanding the binder. Because like every time Frank writes a poem, we put it in here, and then here's the poem he wrote for Jesse got published in our zine.
Nice.
And then selected more prose stuff, but it's mainly poems. So the binder just keeps getting thicker. But it's kind of like got everything in it. Does it have the long poem? Did we ever? No. No. Erica.
Maxed out the binder.
We maxed out. The binder just has to get moved to another binder. Should we put it in there as the individual poems or as the one poem? As the individual poems. Future project.
Add that to the list.
Add it to the list. How do you manage A-S as one B body? Because there's like a bunch of us and it's challenging. How do you manage as one body?
Well, I am one body, but I do have help, you know. I do have friends that help me with stuff, and, you know, because we all have different skills, obviously, and like in any kind of family. But, I am one person now. My girlfriend was with me for 5 years, and we lived together, and she helped me with all the organization, with the food, with the bills, with, you know, technical support all around. And besides her just being there, she helped me with a lot of stuff. And then recently, since last year, I've been on my own again. So it's been kind of hard because I don't rely on my friends as much as I would a partner. And I can't ask my friends the same things. So, but lately, you know, I've had some friends doing technical stuff, and then other friends check in on me. So, you know, I have a good support system in varying degrees. But it is hard being one body. It is hard, you know. We need community. But my girlfriend had to leave because she had to grow up. So I stayed where I am. And I actually told her to leave.
How did she have to grow up?
She had to go to work because she's really smart and she needed to get a job. And she kind of, she transitioned from male to female, and I transitioned from female to male around the same time, and both of us. And so she stayed with me because she lost a lot of opportunities and a lot of money and a lot of credit when she changed over. So she kind of ended up, you know, we're in love. She kind of ended up slumming with me in a bit, in a way, because I've always been on SSI for a long time, and I've always had, you know, this kind of housing, you know, being in the system. And she never had. She'd always had her own business. And then when that collapsed, you know, and the whole love thing came together. But basically, eventually I said, you know, I think you should get your own apartment because I can't handle all the bills myself, you know, because I do some labor or whatnot in the yards. But cosmically, when she did leave, she ended up finding a job in the high-tech field because her IQ is like 180. Mm-hmm. And she's like super smart. She's like a genius. So anyway, make a long story longer. basically, she ended up finding an apartment, you know, the love of her life, and a job, making a lot of money, because I asked her to move out. Because I loved her, and I wanted her to do better in life. And I'm never going to do better.
Do you get R.O. royalties?
Royalties?
From setting her on that path to success.
Well, actually, yeah, royalties I do, because that's why I'm all have all my two pairs of pants and I'm going to Canada, is because I actually got a disability settlement, which I have to say is probably from God or whatever, in 2001, where I actually got a lot of money for no reason. So I loaned her a lot of money. And so after 911, I loaned her shitload of money. And I said, don't worry about it, pay me back, you know, just pay your rent over wherever you are and take care of yourself, right? So now she's got this huge job in Silicon Valley. That's why we're going to Canada, because now I'm getting paid back, I have to say. So it's been a boon for me as well, but I miss her, you know. But, you know, I'm going to stay young forever, and she's not. She has to go out and be a grown-up, be in the world, and I'm not going to be doing that real soon. So that's the long story on that.
R. Reed. One more poem. B. E. Before. Your. F. R. I. E. Friend. C.
Come to pick him up.
Oh, my friend's coming soon. Yeah, because I thought 2 hours, right?
Right, that's right. Yeah. Read one more poem.
Okay. Do you want politics, humor, or what? I got... Yeah.
Your... D... F... A... Your favorite.
I don't really have a favorite. But I'll read this one political one. It's kind of long. It's a couple of minutes long. Is that cool with you, Frank?
Yes. Okay.
It's called Give Us a Lap Dance, The End Is Near. The future's given a lap dance, but luckily it's too dark to see the wrinkles. So stand at attention, feel that red, white, and blue pride swell. She's got two bad eyes, a sore on her lip. Destiny is browbeaten, hunkered down, ready to one-up herself. She ain't got nothing on Hitler, Mussolini, Cheney, does she? Please board now. The ship they told us would never sink is sinking again. But the sunset is amazing. The record is skipping. The champagne has been pissed in so many times. The universal joke is embalmed, worming, passé. Nobody's laughing. The party's been over since the first stone was ever hurled. We are limping towards our own execution, the corners of our mouths clipped in irony. Practice in black-lit mirrors, reading Spin magazine. And what a story this will make. Where can we link our elevated yellow panic and government-sanctioned obliteration? Is there a chat room appropriate to make the biggest splash? Big Brother's flipping our switches, our DNA. The CIA swims in our blood. But popularity doesn't matter anymore, until there's a uniform pounding at the door, right? Any more than giant tsunamis and hurricanes and running out of gasoline matter, right? Adam and Eve, don't look beyond my fig leaf. Whenever I fuck, Barbie and Ken have lived in vain. But I'll never have a car with a sunroof anyway, as long as the Black Power movement is still treading water. MTV, what does the taste of bile reveal about 90-pound girls going wild? I've never seen it on the newsreel. Wretching sounds in the women's studies class, wretching sounds on spring break. But don't blame this generation, illiterate but downloading all the deeper meanings plastic band of cyber monkeys. With my phone unplugged, I get the news in my sleep. via karmic reruns of a century imploding on itself. All those hometown legless boys could be sitting on bar stools right now, watching football games, holding the women's movement back 50 years, or shooting deer instead of Iraqis. My heroes will go AWOL or bomb Wall Street. But what do I know about bringing down empires? I have barely the fortitude to tie my own shoes. I have been declared incompetent. Born to lose, my planned obsolescence was planned by me. It's all quicksand, this American dream, and we are all at this very moment nowhere to be found. Praise be to Allah for that.
Six. What is your your website?
I don't have a website, but I publish at www.literaryrevolution.com.
Literaryrevolution.com.
Underground Literary Alliance website, and then I have quite a bit of archives, poems, and an interview there. I also want to do a plug. Me and my friend Joe are going to be reading at Moe's in November. I know it's a long ways away, but we'll be there in Berkeley on November 6th.
Oh, wow. And what was the website again? Literary what?
Literaryrevolution.com. Okay. And it's very worth checking out. It's literary activists from the underground, you know, trying to take the piss out of the academic poets.
Got it. Yeah.
I think you'd like that site, Frank, if you haven't checked it out yet.
Yeah. What should I what should I ask you?
What should you ask? I don't know. I don't know what you should ask me. Honestly, I can't answer that. I'm going to ask you where the bathroom is pretty soon, though.
On that note, we'll make it a wrap. Christopher
Robin.
Well,
thank you, Frank.
S.
Enjoyed it very much.
N. Send us your videos.
Videos will do.
Yeah.
Because you're one of the few people that's actually asked me to do that. So you know you're going to get them.
That's a wrap. Yeah.
And Todd will be happy too, because he's like,